We're holding on Mem Zayin Amud Beis, the first line of the wide lines. We started learning yesterday the Machlokas Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish about whether, like this, we said in the Mishnah that Kinyan Kesef doesn't work for Metalplin. Thus, for example, we said Kesef ain't a Kones HaZahav, that when you give the silver in exchange for the gold, giving the silver doesn't accomplish the Kinyan yet. Only giving the gold does, because then there's Mashicha on the Peiros, the gold, as we said at the beginning of the Perek, being considered the Peiros. So we discussed yesterday, Rabbi Yochanan said that Minatora, Mois Konus, that money would acquire Minatora, and it's only Midrabanan, they made a Takana instead, that you need Mashicha. We said, Shem Yomrilo Nisifuchitecha Baaliyah, because after he bought it, after he paid the money, if a fire breaks out in the warehouse over there, then he has no particular incentive to save it. Because he's going to say, look, I already got my money, it's yours, it's not my problem that a fire broke out. Like this, if we say the Kenyan hasn't happened yet, then that will motivate him to try to save it, because otherwise the deal will fall through. Where's Rish Lakish, we said he brought a pasuk to say that to substantiate the concept of Mashicha. So he says that the concept that you need Mashicha is Daraisa. Okay, so the Gemara says Tanan. Let's look at our Mishnah and see which opinion it fits with. And we said in the Mishnah, after we mentioned all of these examples that the Mishnah had brought about one thing acquiring another and not vice versa, gold, the giving of the gold coins creates the Kinyan, that now he owes him the silver, but not the other way around, and copper and silver and copper, and coins that don't circulate well versus coins that do, et cetera, et cetera. Then the Mishnah had said at the end, Reb Shimon Omer Kol Sha'a Kesef B'Yado, Yado Alel Yom. Reb Shimon said that whichever one has the money in his hands has the upper hand. Meaning, in other words, that it's the seller who now has the money in his hand who is able to retract from the deal, but not the lekeach. So moichu hu demotzi hoderbe lekeach lemotzi hoderbe. So in other words, we're saying Reb Shimon is saying that the seller can there can be a point when the seller can retract, but not the buyer. Unlike now, the chachamim are saying that when the kinyan hasn't happened yet, either one can retract. We're saying, for example, when it comes to, let's say, when it comes to paying money for, when it comes to paying silver for gold, for example, we were saying when he gave him the silver, then and no Mashicha has been done on the gold coins yet, then there's no Kinyan. The Tanakama would say at that point, either of them could change their mind and back out of the deal, except that there's Mishapore involved. Whereas Reb Shimon it says that no, once the moicher has received the money, once the moicher has received the silver, then Yod Alo Yona, he's the one who has the upper hand and can decide whether to back out of the deal or not. So the Gemara says, Iyamet b'shlema mois koinus. So if you tell me, like Reb Yechanan, that on a daraisa level, Kinyan Kesef works. Well, that explains why Reb Shimon would say that at this point only one of them can retract, namely the seller. Reb Shimon would say, in other words, like this: When do we say like Reb Yechanan that Mashicha is only takana derabanan? Then Reb Shimon would say, you know what? It's one thing. The Chachamim are going to make that takana only on behalf of the seller. Why? Because again, you want to have, in case the price goes up, he's going to think to himself, you know what? I don't. I still want to have myself open the option that if the price goes up, that I should be able to retract on it. So therefore, the Chachamim are going to make the takana in his favor and leave him that opening to do that. Whereas the lekeach, we would say once he gave the money, you're already mois koinus, and therefore the Chachamim are not going there. Therefore, the Chachamim are going to leave that as is. That's a point of Rashi that we're saying. In other words, that the moicher would say, in effect, I still want to have an out in case the price goes up, because I want to be able to actually we're saying that in the case of the moicher, once you tell him that he's able to change his mind and back out of it, meaning that if the price goes up, then he will be able to tell the lekeach, you know what, I don't want to sell it unless you give me more money, the fact that you do that alone is going to be enough to avoid the nisikuchitecha ba'aliyah problem, says Reb Shimon, because then at that point, knowing that he could conceivably make more money on this if he goes up, if it goes up, therefore, if a fire breaks out, he's going to make the effort to save it. With the lekeach, on the other hand, we would say we would leave things as it was originally, that kesef is koine. That's a point of Rashi.
One Tosfos second. Are we discussing this on the presumption that they've agreed on a price, or that they have not agreed on a price?
No, we're talking about they agreed on a price. We're talking about not only they agreed on a price, but the other guy already gave him the money back.
So if they agreed on a price, what is the discussion about? They've agreed. That's it.
No, because that's what we're saying. Since they have the ability. That we're saying that as a result of the fact that no Mashiach has taken place yet, because of, according to Rabbi Yechonon, there's a Takana de Rabbanon involved over here, then it means Midaraisa, we would have said once he paid him the money, that's that. The money has been paid and the Kinyan's been accomplished. Midrabbanon, we would say the Kinyan has not yet been accomplished. Therefore, they would have the right, either one would have the right to back out. Now, Rabbi Yochanan is saying.
Well, Midrabbanan, one second. With Midrabbanan, they should have had stipulated that before they agreed on the price, not afterwards.
Okay, no. The point is, even though they agreed on a price, we're going to discuss as we go through the Gemara, there's several stages. You have a point when it's only Kinyan Dvarim Ba'alma, when they've only said verbally that they've agreed on a price. Even at that point, we're going to learn later on that. Each of them should keep to their word. Your hain should be tzedek, as the Gemara learns on Daf Mem Tes. When you say yes or when you say no, it should be honest and you shouldn't renege on it. Nevertheless, though, a person is able to, or he has the right, al pi halacha, to do that. It's not the right thing to do, but he does have the ability to do that, al pi halacha. Then you come to a second stage, which is what we're dealing with over here, where the money has already changed hands. Even then, we're saying, because no Kenyan has happened yet, then he's still able to change his mind. However, then we have the Misha Parda that the Mishnah mentioned. Then you have the third stage, which is when the Kenyan has taken place, and the Kenyan could take place either before or after the money has changed hands. And then once the Mashicha has taken place, then neither one of them can change their mind. So it's not a matter of whether they agree.
Regardless of the price, like let's say you talk about a $100 million deal. They've agreed on the price before Mashiach.
Okay, so here's the deal. There is a concept in the Gemara called Kinyan Situmta. It's not mentioned over here in our sugya, but it's mentioned, I think, in Baba Basra. There is something called Kinyan Situmta, which is when you have a certain kind of Kinyan, which is accepted in a certain society as being a valid way of doing a Kinyan, then that also has validity according to Halacha. That's the basis of, for example, when they say nowadays in connection with Mechiras Chametz, how is it that when you're selling your Chametz using an online form, how does that work when there's no Kinyan or anything? So that's an example of Kinyan Situmta, because it's accepted in general society that your signature on whatever information you put in a web page over there is binding, and therefore Halacha considers it binding as well. Another example they often give is in the diamond business, where a handshake is considered enough to seal a deal. So then that's also an example of Kinyan Situmta. Here we're not dealing with that. Here we're talking about the original Kinyanim that are the various Kinyanim that are Midaraisa, Midrabanan, that the Gemara itself tells us. So now, in order for them to not be able to retract, there needs to be one of those Kinyanim. So now what we're saying is, according to Rabbi Yochanan, Midaraisa, the exchange of money, would have accomplished a Kinyan. Midrabanan, we're saying that no, you need Mashicha. And until Mashicha, either one of them could legally change his mind and back out of the deal and say, I'm not selling it to you unless, because the price has gone up or down or whatever, unless you give me more money or unless I pay you less money, as the case may be. So that's what we're dealing with over here. So what we're saying is like this. Rabbi Yochanan had said that midaraisa mois koinis. The reason he said why the Chachamim changed that is because of the problem of nisruf uchitecha ba'aliyah, that if a fire breaks out in the warehouse, then the guy, the moicher who had the wheat and now it no longer belongs to him on the bait because of the Kinyan Kesef has no incentive to save it. Whereas if you say that until the Lekeach does Mashicha, then he can change his mind. Then if it gets burnt, then obviously the Lekeach is going to say, I want out of the deal. And therefore that will give the moicher an incentive to save that wheat. Now, Reb Shimon is saying that in order to accomplish that, you don't really need to make So again, following Rabbi Yochanan's logic, he would understand Rabbi Shimon as saying as follows. When Rabbi Shimon says, Kol sha kesef b'yadoi, yadoi ala yoyna, then Rabbi Shimon would take the view, it's enough for our purposes to say that one side can change his mind and not the other. Once you say that the moicher has the ability to change his mind, if it goes up, then therefore, if the price goes up, then therefore he's going to be moser nefesh to save that wheat, thinking that after all, it still kind of belongs to me. I'm the moicher. It's true. I want to get rid of this wheat. I want to sell it to somebody else and get money for it instead. But after all, if a fire breaks out, I'm not going to have any wheat to sell. So therefore, I'm going to be moser nefesh to save it. So therefore, Rav Shimon says that you don't need to make the takana that also the lakeach should be able to change his mind, because what would be the purpose of it? So now the question is, the Gemara's question is, that works out very nicely, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that the whole thing is a takana derabanan. According to Rish Lakish, who holds that the whole concept that Meshicha is a kinyan and Kesef is not, is daraisa, then according to him, how can Rav Shimon draw such a distinction? The Torah doesn't draw any such distinction. Now, Tosfos points out, though, that you're saying that the moicher is going to say, yeah, but if I want to be able to change my mind if it goes up. But Tosfos says, I mean, so what? We're making a whole takana for people who are not erlich, for people who are not decent and honest, that they're going to go and save it only because they might make a buck out of it, and then he's willing to accept on himself misha parah. So first Tosfos says, yep, that's how it is. We have to make a takana also on behalf of such, not on behalf of, but in order to deal with such people, in order to deal with people like that, who are not erlich, who are not going to exert themselves to save somebody else's possessions unless there's something in it for them. So yeah, there is that. Then Tosfos says that actually Tosfos brings a longer thing from Rabbi Natan, who says that no, actually technically, if the wheat or whatever commodity burnt, then even Rabbi Shimon would agree that the buyer can back out of the deal. And he brings a proof from later on in the sugya. So here we're talking about, in other words, that we're not saying that a fire breaks out per se, but we're just saying, in other words, that Rabbi Shimon would say that there is one. Once we have that the moicher, who's the one who now has the money in his possession, once you say that he's able to back out of the deal, because again, he's saying that so we're saying, in other words, that the reason why Torach Moicher Matzel, Tosfos explains, is because he doesn't want the other guy to change his mind. He doesn't want that there should be some damage to it or whatever, where then the other guy, then the Lakeach, will have the ability to back out. So therefore, he's going to be Tereach, and he's going to go to the trouble to avoid that problem. But again, according to Rabbi Shimon, you don't need to make for that purpose that neither of them should be able to change their mind. It's enough to be able to say that when there's no fire, that only the moicher can change his mind, not the lekeach, and that will accomplish the same thing. So that's what the Gemara says then. So iamet b'shlema mois konis, if you say like Rabbi Yochanan, that money is kona on a daraisa level, so now, and Rabbi Shimon is saying that now the Chachamim, or Rabbi Yochanan is saying the Chachamim made a takana of Mashiach, mishum hochi mochi motza hodebe, lekeach lo motzi hodebe. That explains why Rabbi Shimon would say it's a one-sided thing, because all you need is to say that the moicher is able to change his mind, and that will accomplish what we need to in terms of what the takana was meant to accomplish, to avoid the problem of nisufuchi techabalia. Eli, amit mois einen konis, but if you say, like you're shlokish, that money is not kona in the first place, lekeach nami lehederbe, then why shouldn't the lekeach be able to change his mind as well? And the answer is Amalach Rishlokish, Halibdid Rav Shimon, like I'm in. So Rishlokish is going to say, very simple, my opinion, you're right, it doesn't fit with Rav Shimon's opinion. You're right, necessarily Rav Shimon would have to say, like Rav Yochanan, that midaraisa mois konis. Ki kamin, Halibdid Rabbanan, my opinion, that Meshicha is minatora, is indeed only according to the Chachamin. So yeah, according to me, in other words, Rish Lakish would say the machloikas between me and Rabbi Yochanan is actually the same machloikas as between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim about what the source of the concept of Mashiach is. Well, the Gemara asks now the other way around. B'shlema l'Rish Lakish hainu de'ikah ben Rabbi Shimon l'Rabbanan. Well, according to Rish Lakish, then that's we understand now what's the reason for the machloikas between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. Whether Mashiach is daraisa and therefore it has to apply across the board, or whether Mashiach is derabanan and therefore you can apply it to only one side. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, why would they be arguing in the first place? And the answer is because you have the consideration that Rav Chista says Rav Chista says that the same way as the Rav Chista is saying just that, the same way as the Chachamim said, as far as the seller, that until the Lekeach does Mashicha, the seller can change his mind, and therefore he has the benefit of being able to change his mind if in between the price goes up and he says, you know what, I want to have more money for this. The same way the Chachamim said, as part of that same takana, that the lekeach has the ability to change his mind if the price goes down or whatever. So, in other words, that so the priest is saying just that it is true that the takana primarily should be only on one side, but nevertheless, when the Chachamim made this takana, they also made for the same reason that it should apply in either direction. Well, Rav Shimon Lesle did Rav Chista, Rabbanon Islehu did Rav Chista. Well, then Rav Shimon doesn't agree with Rav Chista's concept, so he still holds that Mashicha, that the Takana of Mashicha was only one-sided. So therefore, according to him, you only have it on one side. Now, therefore, he says that there comes a point when the moicher can change his mind. The lekeach, who doesn't have the money in his hand anymore, cannot. Rav Shimon holds that once you say that the moicher will be able to change his mind, then therefore if the lekeach sees that a fire is about to break out, then he's going to say, "Chizrani be that I'm going to change my mind." That's according to Rav Chista. Whereas according to Rav Shimon, we don't need that. Once we have that the moicho can change his mind, that's reason enough that he'll be moser nefesh to save that wheat or whatever it is to prevent it from getting burnt. Because again, he figures that the Chachamim have given me an out to change my mind in case the price goes up, and therefore I have an incentive until the wheat actually leaves my possession to be able to claim that I should be able to charge more for it if the price goes up. Therefore, that'll give him enough of an incentive. And Rav Shimon holds that the Chachamim did not have to make the second part of the takana. But Rabbanon Issehu de Rav Chista, whereas the Rabbanon hold what Rav Chista says, that the Chachamim made this a two-way takana. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, that would be the underlying machlokas. Both Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim in the Mishnah would agree that Mashicha is Dirabbanan, but the machlokas would be how far did the Chachamim carry the takana? Okay, so the Gemara says Tanan. Now let's look at the continuation of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says Avol Amru. Now, however, even though again after money has changed hands, we're saying according to the Chachamim that either one can change his mind, and according to Rabbi Shimon at that point only the moicher who now has the money in his possession can change his mind. Avol Amru, but the Chachamim said about somebody who does that, who reneges on a deal like that, Misha Parah Midera Mabul, Hashem, who punished the generation of the Mabul and various other generations in Jewish history, as we're going to learn later, who also the Parah Mimisha in Omid B'Dibore, Hashem is going to punish somebody who doesn't keep his word. Now, if you say like Rabbi Yochanan that there is a kinyan that was accomplished on a daraisa level by money changing hands, well, that would explain why the Chachamim are saying, fine, we're saying that instead you need Mashicha. However, we're not completely taking away the din daraisa of mois. We're still saying a person doesn't carry through after he pays the mois, then there's Misha Parah, then there's a curse involved. We're going to learn later on in the Gemara what the nature of that curse is, whether the Mishnah is just saying that such a person deserves to be cursed, or whether they actually make it an official thing and based in, whatever. The point is, Rabbi Yochanan has reason, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the Mishnah would have reason to say that. Eli Yamat Mois and Koinus, but if you say like Rish Lakish, that money is Bechlal not Koinah, Amai Koi Ba'avol, then why should there be this Avol? Why should there be this Misha Parah? If Midar Isa, nothing has happened yet when the money changed hands. And the answer is Mishum Dvarim. Yeah, because he said that, because they, like you said before, they made up a price between them, and that would be reason enough. So the Gemara says, why? Why does Misha Parah apply when it was only a verbal agreement and money didn't even change hands yet? Well, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Reb Shimon Omer, Reb Shimon says, even though as we've learned, as we've been learning, the gold dinar, which for this purpose is considered money, as we learned in the Mishnah, gold is considered peiros relative to silver, but relative to other commodities, it's considered money. So even though the talus, if you do meshicha on the talus, then it's koina, the gold dinar, meaning once you did meshicha on the talus, then that obligates you to pay the gold dinar to the person you're buying it from. The ein dinar zahav koina talus, and the reverse is not true. If you give him the gold dinar, the kinyan has not been accomplished yet, and one or the other of you could back out. So even though that is true, that is the technical halacha that you're able to change your mind and Beis Din can't stop you. Avol amru, but the Chachamim say, Misha Parim Anche Dera Mabel, Hashem who paid back the people of the Dera Mabel, Anche Dera Floga, and the people of the Dera Floga, the Tower of Babel, Ome Anche Sdoim Va'amorda, and from the people of Sdoim and Amorda, Ome Mitzriim Bayam, and Hashem who paid back and punished the Mitzriim at the Yam, so who also be part of Misha Ina Omen B'dibor, right? Hashem will pay back and punish somebody who doesn't keep his word. And he continues, V'hanoisa b'noisin b'dvarim loikona. Now the Mishnah continues, now the Braisa continues, this is all when money actually changed hands, that there's Misha Parah. What about when a person just makes a verbal deal? They agree between them that the price is going to be such and such. Loikona, then there's no kinyan at all, because with words you can't make a kinyan. And if either of them changes his mind, ein ruach chachamim noichahimenu, the chachamim are not pleased with him. Now, what does that mean? The chachamim are not pleased with him means there's no mishapara. V'omar Rava, and in fact, Rava stresses that means onu ein lanu ela ein ruach chachamim noichahimenu. That's what it means. In other words, only that ein ruach chachamim noichahimenu. You shouldn't think that means there's also, Tosfos points out, that's Rava is stressing the point. You shouldn't think that ein ruach chachamim noichahimenu and mishapara are the same thing. No, Rava says realize that those are two separate things. So we see from this braisa that when there's only kinyan dvarim, then there's no mishapara. Only when money actually changed hands, then there's mishapara. Now, how could Rav Shlokish then say that because there were dvarim over here in our Mishnah, therefore that would be reason enough for mishapara? Based on this braisa, it comes out that not mishapara only comes into play when there's actual money involved. As far as this point about the talus versus the dinar zahav, so again, Rashi explains that even though, as we learned at the beginning of the parak, gold coins are not considered currency relative to silver, but relative to anything else they are, therefore the braisa can be talking about a gold dinar versus a talus. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Chananel explains that no, Rabbi Shimon over here would be following the opinion that we had at the beginning of the parak, that gold is always considered the money and silver would be the commodity. So which in fact the halacha wouldn't be like that. We talked about the other day also what Tosfos says, that this may differ at different times. Maybe there are times, there can be times in history when gold circulates very commonly and is considered makbeya, versus you have other times when it doesn't and it would be considered peira. Anyway. So we also talked about the other day why we mentioned after these ones, the Anche Dera Mabel and the Anche Dera Floga and so forth. So there's the Rosh's explanation that the Anche Dera Mabel did not keep their word. They were dishonest. They were stealing from one another and they weren't keeping their word. The Anche Sdoim V'Amorah, similarly, the Anche Dera Floga, we're mentioning incidentally. Once we're mentioning the people of the Mabel, we mentioned the people of the Dera Floga as well, even though in fact, they were honest and got along well with each other. And as far as the Mitzriim, we know they didn't keep their word because Pare over and over said, I'll let the Jewish people go, and then reneged on it. We talked about what the Tiferes Yisrael says, that there are four different reasons why a person might do an Avera, because of Taivas, because of greed, and so on and so forth. And each one of them is reflected in one of these four groups. And then we talked about what the Rebbe talks about in a Sicha in Tavshin Mem Tes, that the deeper idea behind it is Meshicha represents a person's avoida milamata. Kesef represents the Ashpa that's given to him milamaila. And the point is, we're saying if a yid is given that hashpah milamayla, and then he doesn't follow through, then we tell him, you know what? Look, you're a yid. You're a child of Hashem. So it's not becoming of you. You're living in a world where it's necessary. We're living in a world where you have the anshe dirt amabel and the anshe dirt afloga and so on and so forth. You live in that kind of world, and therefore you have to put in your own effort. It's not enough for you to depend on what Hashem is giving. And that way, that itself motivates him to do better and to actually put in his effort and do his meshicha in terms of avoda. Anyway, the point is getting back to the Gemara. So we see that there are two. We see that there are different stages. When there's only words involved and there's no mishapara, only ein ruach chachamim neichehem menu. The chachamim are not pleased with such a person. And then you have when money has changed hands, where then you have mishapara. So the question is then, so again, back to our Mishnah, when we're saying that there is Mishapara, according to Rabbi Yechanan, we can understand why the Chachamim would impose Mishapara, because after all, there is money changed hands, and that means that already a Kinyan has taken place on some level, on a Daraisa level. But according to the Shlokish, that money doesn't do anything at all, then according to him, why is there even a Mishapara for that? Is it only because of the words? But for words, we said there's no Mishapara. So the Gemara answers, because Dvorim v'ikaba dayomos koi ba'avol. Rish Lakish is going to say, when there's words, but there is also accompanied by money, then that's when Rish Lakish is going to say that there is avol, that there is mishapara. It's true that the money itself is not accomplishing a kinyan, but now we have together with it, then you have together with it, you have Dvorim, so therefore Rabbi Yechanan is saying, and therefore Rish Lakish is saying, that that's a much stronger thing. But if you only have words without money changing hands, then Rish Lakish is going to say there's no avol over there. The words by themselves are not strong enough to trigger mishapar. Now Tosfos wonders in that case what was the Gemara even bringing the question for? Isn't the Braisa itself draws this distinction between words and money? And the answer is, given that this braisa is appointed of Shimon, and Reb Shimon is saying that and again, we said before, Rish Lakish has said, my whole opinion that Mois are not konus, that Mois do not accomplish any kind of kinyan, is only according to the Chachamim. We established before that according to Rish Lakish, necessarily he's going to have to say, Reb Shimon holds like Reb Yechanan, that Mois konus on a daraisa level, so maybe therefore, the braisa, when it says that when there's money, the mishapara would be only according to Reb Shimon. So the Gemara assumed that if Reb Shimon says there's mishapara when it comes to money, maybe the Chachamim would say that there's mishapara only by words, and was saying that no, even according to Rish Lakish, there's no mishapara when it comes to words. Rashi also points out at this point in the sugya that the nafkamina between Rabbi Yechanan and Rish Lakish would be given that according to Rabbi Yechanan, you have a valid kinyan here with deraisa once money has changed hands, and only derabbanan do we say there's no kinyan yet. What if at that point you took that object and were makadish a woman with it yet? According to Rabbi Yechanan, it would work, and according to Rish Lakish, it would not. Achronim asked why Rashi has to mention that particular naftamina. You have many other naftaminas. We've learned some of them in the Gemara before. We said we wrote a couple of rare cases where we said that Mois will work according to Rabbi Yechanan, because we would say the Chachamim's takana was never meant to cover such unusual cases, and meanwhile according to Rish Lakish, such cases also you would say that even in such cases you would say that money is not koina. So why does Rashi have to find the one particular example over here? So one answer is that Rashi wants to find a common example. Again, those cases, the Gemara itself said, were rare, so therefore Rashi wants to find a more common example. There are other possibilities that Rashi could have brought up, one of them being a matter of in cases of Me'ila, for example. So Rashi says, La'inyan Isura, so that can cover cases of Me'ilah as well, because Isurah would be not only as far as Kiddushin, but as far as Me'ilah or any other case where there's things Daraisa involved. So the Gemara says, Omar Rava, Kro Masnisa Mesaila L'Rish Lakish. There's a Pasuk and a Braisa that both support Rish Lakish's position that money does not accomplish a Kinyan outside of Hekdish, whereas according to Rabbi Yechanan, it would accomplish on a Daraisa level, it would accomplish Kinyan, and you need Mishicha, only Dirabbanan, but we have a Pasuk that shows that fits better with Rish Lakish's opinion, and we have a Braisa that fits better with Rish Lakish's opinion. Mikra Dichtiv, you have a pasuk that says V'chichesh ba'amisoi. The pasuk describes where a person denies a claim of somebody else's, where we learned all about this in Bava Kamma. A person denies a claim and swears falsely about it. The pikadon, whether it was a pikadon where the person deposited money with him for safekeeping, over sumas yod, or with sumas yod, where he put money into his hand, which means a loan. Oy begozel, or that he stole from him. Oy oshak asamisoi, or he was oshak, he withheld wages that belonged to somebody else. So the person worked for him and he owes him X amount of wages and he's withholding it. So in all those cases, you can have where he then denies the claim and swears falsely on it. And when it turns out, when he's ready to do tshuva, then as we learned in Bava Kamma, he pays back the value of the claim plus a chomesh and he brings a korban oshak. Now, one of the ones we had over here was tsumas yod, where he placed money in his hand, which means a loan. And Omer of Chista, so Omer of Chista, sort of Chista says on that, you should realize where it doesn't just mean that there's a loan involved over here. We're talking about where the loiva set aside a particular keli that it's going to be the vehicle by which the loan is going to be repaid. So now, in other words, the point is, Rav Chista is saying the same way as by pikadon, you have the pikadon is an actual object that he deposited with him and which he expects to get back. The same way, Rav Chista is saying the other things in the pasuk also have to refer to things where you have an actual item that he wants back. So in the case of a loan, you don't have that. When you give money for a loan, you don't expect to get back that same money. So Chista says we have to be talking about that there was a keli designated to pay back the loan, and then now the malva is coming and saying, where's that keli? And the loiva denies that he owes it. Otherwise, in other words, the point is we don't have an actual object over here, and therefore he wouldn't be chayav a korban for shvua because milvaloitz on it. Similarly, Oshek, Omer of Chista, country Yichud like Klila Oshkai. Similarly, Rav Chista says, as far as Oshek, same idea. We're talking about, in other words, that when he worked for him, when he first started working for him, the employer set aside a keli that he's going to use to pay the worker afterwards, and now he denies owing him that keli. Kia Hadrekra. Now, when the pasuk repeats when it says Veheshav Esagzela, the pasuk says Vahoyaki Yechtav Ashrim. Now, when the person has sinned in one of these ways and he's guilty and he's ready to do tshuva, Veheshav Esagzela Asher Gozal, then he has to return the stolen thing that he sold, Oyasa Oshak Asher Oshak, or the Oshak, the withheld wages that he had withheld, Oyasa Pikodin Asher Hofkad Itoy, or the Pikodin that had been deposited with him, the Ilut Suma. Now, one thing that's missing is that Tsumas Yod was not repeated in the pasuk over there. So why not? My timer, Lav Mishum de Mechasra Meshicha. The reason must be because there's no Meshicha and that Keli has been accomplished yet. So, like this, you're saying a Keli was set aside to pay back the loan, but the Malva never did Meshicha on that Keli. Therefore, we can't say that he truly owns it. There was no Kinyan done on it yet. Now, as far as Oshek, Tosfos says, fine, there might be some other drosha for which it repeats Oshek. But the point is, in other words, that we're saying that even though a keli was set aside for it, and again, it has to be that there was a keli set aside, because otherwise there's nothing to talk about him even being chayav a korban, because there's no mitzios over here that he denied some mitzios and now should be chayav a korban because of it, because there's no money be'ain. But nevertheless, the pasuk doesn't even repeat the matter of the tsumas yod. The implication would be that he doesn't have to give him the keli. Why? Because there was no meshicha yet. So that bears out the Shlokish's point that until there's meshicha, there's no kinyan. However, Amalei Papa Rava, Ema Me'oshiku Dehodekra, but Papa says to Rava, why? Maybe you could say that the posit. Maybe you could say on the contrary, since the posit did repeat the matter of Oshek, and the Oshek also we said involves a keli, And nevertheless, the Torah is machayev him to give him the keli. So that shows that even without mashicha, you're koina. So why are you focusing on the fact that the sumas yad is missing? Focus on the fact that the oshek was repeated, and that also involves a keli. And the answer is no, because hachav ma'askin gunshin not the matter of a chazir v'ifkida etzloi. No, because you could say that in the case of oshek, you could have where the worker took the keli from the balabais, made a kinyan on it, and then was mafkid it by him again. Then he said, you know what, I'm making a kinyan on this keli, so you're going to give it to me when I finish the job. Meanwhile, I'm going to deposit with you for safekeeping. Well, then Mashiach has been accomplished. Well, Rapapa asks, Hainu Pikodin. Well, then that's the same as Pikodin. Then why would the Torah have to mention it anyway? So he says, Chere Gavni Pikodin, because there are two kinds of Pikodin. One where there was one where he, out of the blue, he gave him the Pikodin, and the other one where there's work involved and he's giving it to him as Pikodin until he finishes the work. So Rapapa says, Ihochi, Sumas Yad Nami Lahadre. Well, then the Torah could have repeated Sumas Yad as well, could have repeated the case of the loan. The Loikman, you could use the same kind of answer. Shanotlam Hemenu Vachozarev Kidatzlai, where he took it from him and said, I'm doing Mashiach on it now, and then deposited it for him for safekeeping. And now later on, the Loiva claims that he doesn't owe it at all. So why didn't it do that? The very fact that it didn't do that by Tsumas Yod and does do that by Oshik. So you're telling me because it didn't repeat Tsumas Yod, therefore that means that without Mashicha, according to Rish Lakish, there's no Kinyan. But you could say, on the other hand, Oshik did repeat. And again, you're not going to say that if you're going to say by Oshik, you're talking about that it's a Bikodin, you could do the same thing by Tsumas Yod. Why are you distinguishing between one and the other? And Rava answers him, the fact is, you're right. If the Torah had repeated Sumas Yod as well, then you're right. There'd be no question. Then this pasuk would be irrelevant to our discussion. You couldn't ask on Rish Lakish from it, and you couldn't use it to prove Rish Lakish either. You couldn't ask on him because Rish Lakish could easily say we're talking about in both cases there was Mashiach. On the other hand, you can't prove it because you could say that you could say there's no proof for him that there was Mashiach, because there wasn't necessarily, but there'd be no tiuvda on him either. There'd be no question on him, because you could say there was Mashiach. Hashda loya hadrekra. The fact is, right now you have one thing missing in the pasuk. Therefore, we have good reason to say Messiah that it does support Rish Lakish. It is true. In other words, he's saying to the Papa, conceivably you could understand both by Tsumas Yad and by Pikodin that we're talking about, that you could talk about either possibility, either that he never did Mashiach on it or that he did. But precisely because the Pasuk repeats one of them and does not repeat the other, that gives us very strong reason to say, like Rish Lakish, that the Torah itself is drawing that distinction between whether there was Mashiach or not. And that one case we should understand is talking where there was Mashiach and the other case not. And that is why in one case he has to give it to him and the other case he doesn't. Well, I'm going to ask Tsumas Yod Laya Hadre Kura. You're telling me the Torah does not repeat again the Tsumas Yod? In effect, it does. Baltani, we learn in a brisa, Omer Reb Shimon, Minayin Litin Esa Omer Lamayla Lamata. How do we know that everything that it said beforehand in the earlier pasuk, when it describes, when it lists out the things that he denied, that everything that applies there also applies later, further on, when the Torah says that he has to return it and bring the korban Hashem? Talmud Loimar, Odichtiv, because the pasuk says, Oymi Koyla Sheyishava Olav Lasheker, or any other case where he swears on a claim falsely, but Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avavu, Amar Rav, L'Rabbis Tzumas Yod L'Yishavan, that those words, Oy Mikol Asher Yishava Olav L'Sheker, come to include the Tzumas Yod. So even though the second pasuk does not say Tzumas Yod, nevertheless, it's included on the basis of those words, Oy Mikol Asher Yishava. So you see that Tzumas Yod in effect is repeated. The Gemara says, okay, the fact is the Torah doesn't actually say the word Sumas Yad. We're learning it from a klal. That's fine. The din still applies, but you shouldn't think that maybe the concept of Shavuos Sheker and having to pay the Keren B'choymish for Asham, you shouldn't think maybe it doesn't apply to it Sumas Yad at all. Sure, it applies, because Oy Mikol Asher Yishava Olav L'Sheker. But still, the very fact that the Torah conspicuously leaves it out in the list is meant says Rava, to give us a drosha that helps support what Rish Lakish is saying, that without Mashiach, even on a Doraisa level, you have no kin. Okay, so that's the pasuk that Rava points out supports Rish Lakish's position. What about Masnisa Manolon? Where's the Braisa that where's the Braisa that bears on this? So D'tanya, we learn in a Braisa. It's actually a Mishnah in Masechta Me'ilah. So maybe it should be D'tanan. But anyway, you have like this in connection with the dinim of Me'ilah. You have a person has a coin that belongs to Hekdesh. Nosna Labalon. He gave it to a bathhouse attendant to take a bath over there. And as usual with Me'ilah, as usual, we're talking about B'shoigig, where therefore that opens him up to now he has to bring the korban on behalf of me, and now he has to pay back Hekdesh the keren v'choymesh and bring a korban asham. In addition, also only when there's me'ilah b'shoigig is there the concept of that now the object that with which me'ilah was done now leaves the possession of Hekdesh and now becomes cholin. In other words, you can't have, it's called ein moyel acham moyel. If let's say, for example, here Reuven took the coin and gave it to Shimon, and then Shimon gives the coin to Levi, only Reuven has committed me'ilah. Shimon, provided that Reuven did it b'shoigig, Shimon has not committed me'ilah anymore, because by the time, now that Shimon has received it b'shoigig from Reuven, it leaves the possession of Hekdesh. So therefore, so the Mishnah, or the Braisa, or the Mishnah says, nosna labalon, that if a person gave this pruta of Hekdesh to a bathhouse attendant, mo'al, so then he, the one who gave it, committed me'ilah, even before he took the bath. But Omar Rav, and Rav explains, davka balon hu, Only by a bathhouse attendant do we say that din applies. Because there's no meshicha to be done. There's no when you're giving to a bathhouse attendant. There's no meshicha to be done, because there's no physical object that you're buying from him. You're only buying from him a service. So avol midyach rita demachasra meshicha. But Rav points out anything else if he used that pruta instead to buy an object. And he didn't yet do Mashiach, loymol ad demoshech. Then he wouldn't have committed Me'ilah until he actually does Mashiach. So you see from that Braisa, that without Mashiach, and here we're talking Me'ilah, which is a Daraisa thing, so we see that on a Daraisa level, there's no kinyan until Mashiach takes place. Okay, Tosfos brings up a number of points in this connection. In effect, when you're paying the bathhouse attendant, in effect, what you're doing kind of is you're renting karka from him. You're renting the ability to use the karka of the bathhouse to take your bath, and therefore, in karka is in fact nikna b'kesef. So you don't need mashiach. And then what is Rabbi Yochanan going to do? What is Rabbi Yochanan going to do with this Mishnah? So the Gemara is going to soon point out that you have a distinction between a Jew and a Goy in this regard. A Goy maybe is koine b'kesef, and a Jew is not. So therefore, so Rabbi Yochanan would say that we're talking about a Goyish bathhouse attendant. But the Braisa therefore more strongly supports Rish Lakish's position. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean when there's no Mashiach, there's no Me'ilah? V'hatanya, we learn in another Braisa, nosna l'saper mal, that if you give the same coin of Hekdesh to a barber, then you have committed Me'ilah even before you took the haircut. V'saper ha'boi l'mimshach tisporis. Now, on the face of it, actually, in the case of a bathhouse attendant, there's no object for you to do Mashiach on. You're going there and bathing in the bathhouse. When it comes to a barber, though, there is an object, because what you do is he uses scissors or a razor or whatever. You would do mashicha in order to make it official that now he has to give you the haircut, would be that you do mashicha on his scissors or his razor or whatever. So in that case, then, so we see that we see that where there's mashicha possible, then you have to do mashicha. So why are we saying that as soon as you give it to the barber where mashicha is possible, then already me'ilah is taking place? And the answer is because this braisa can be talking about a goyish barber where this whole thing that we're talking about as far as Mashiach only applies between Jews. The whole concept of Mashiach, where Rish Lakish is learning it from a pasuk, is the pasuk says, V'chisim kru mimko la'amisecha oikonim yad amisecha. If you sell something to a fellow Jew, or you buy something from a fellow Jew. So not in connection with a goy. A goy is in fact kona with kesef alone. For that matter, Tosfos points out the Gemara Resh Lakish could have answered that this braisa is only according is only according to Reb Shimon. Anyway, so we can say that we're talking about it's a goyish barber delaba mashicha hu, where mashicha doesn't apply when it comes to a transaction between a Jew and a goy. And the Gemara says Tani Nami Hochi. In fact, we learn like that in a braisa that the braisa says more clearly nosna l'saper, if a person gives the pruter of hekesh to a barber or l'sapon or to a ferryman where he's going to use it to he's now going to take a ride on the ferry. Or l'chobale umnus, or any other craftsman where he wants him to do a job for him, loy mal ad demoshach. He hasn't committed me'ila until the guy does mashicha. So kashin adadi. So now you have a contradiction. Do you need mashicha or not? Here we had one braisa that said as soon as you gave the coin to the barber, then already you've committed me'ila. The other one is saying only when mashicha has taken place. So the answer is elalav shmamina. That goes to show kan besapur nochri, kan besapur Yisrael. One's talking about a goyish barber, the other's talking about a Jewish barber. Shmamina. So that proves it. That there would be that distinction. So according to the Shlokish, we would in fact say you need mashicha daraisa, but only when you're talking between Jews. When you're talking a Jew and a goy, then kesef accomplishes a king. This is very negeya as far as mechiras chometz. The kinyan that the goy is going to do on the chometz is going to be a kinyan kesef. However, Tosfos points out over here at some length that even though Rava has said that you have a braisa and you have a posuk that supports Rish Lakish's opinion, nevertheless Tosfos says the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan that daraisa money is koina even for a Jew. And only Dirabbanan do you need Mashiach. And Tosfos goes into a long discussion with various proofs for that point. But the point is, there ends up being, it's not so simple that a goy is koina with kesef. And therefore, we actually try to do, when it comes to Mechiras Chametz, when the Rav sells the Chametz to the goy, he actually uses several different forms of Kinyan in order to make sure, this way he can cover the opinions of all the various Rishonim about what kind of Kinyanim work when it comes to a Jew selling to a goy. And this way, unequivocally, we'll have a sale. Tosfos also points out an interesting thing in this regard. We're saying when it comes to a barber, there would have to be mashicha on the scissors or the razor. By the same token, for example, when you're hiring somebody to write a shtar, to write a sefer Torah or something for you, then you should do, then you, if you do mashicha on his pen, then now you have it's official and now he can't back out of it. In fact, you have when it comes to a sofer writing a get, for example, they have that. That's part of the procedure is that the sofer gives the pen to the husband, and the husband picks it up, does hagbah with it, which is also a kinyan, and then returns it to the sofer, and thereby is officially appointing the sofer his shliach to write the get. I think they also maybe do that by writing Sifrei Torah and by other examples like that. So we see that wherever there's an object that you can do mashicha on, then you do that. According to Rabbi Yochanan, that would be required only Dirabban, and according to Reish Lakish, it would be required Daraisa. Okay. So the Gemara continues. V'chein Omer Rav Nachman Dvar Torah Mois Koinus. Now, besides that, we had Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish arguing on this point of whether money is koina on a daraisa level, and only dirabbanan do we need mashicha or not. So Rabbi Yochanan said that you need mashicha only dirabbanan. Rabbi Nachman says the same thing. Dvar Torah Mois Koinus. That minat Torah money is koina. And furthermore, Rabbi Nachman points out, Ubodka Levi b'masnisei, Levi from an earlier generation had added and corrected a braisa that he had composed. Levi was one of the Talmidim of Rebbe, and many of the Talmidim of Rebbe composed collections of braisas to help explain the Mishnayos that Rebbe had composed. We have, for example, we have the Tesefta, which was written by Rabbi, which was composed by Rabbi and Rabbi Oshia, and we have various other collections of braisas. So Levi made a collection of braisas, and he added the following and then corrected it in his collection of braisas. Again, involving a case of me'ila, nosna l'sitoin, that if you take a pruter of hekdesh and give it to a sitoin, which is a grocer, Rashi explains, a sitoin is chenveni gadol, is a big person who owns a big grocery store. In particular, he sells wholesale to smaller grocers who then go and sell it piecemeal. Now they pay him little by little as they sell things. To begin with, what they do is they give him a down payment, and then later on, as they sell, then they give him more. They give the sitan more and more money. So now, if you gave the pruta to the sitan mal, then you've committed meila, even though you haven't done meshicha on the peiros. In other words, you're making a deal with him. You're going to buy from him a lot of peiros. You only gave him a down payment of one pruta so far, and you didn't do meshicha on all the peiros. Nevertheless, meila has been committed. So this braisa shows that that yes, once money has been given, even though meshicha has not been accomplished yet, then nevertheless meila has already taken place. Well, the Gemara says alakasha l'Rish Lakish. Well, now then the question becomes on Rish Lakish, where according to this braisa, then we see that money is koinim in atoda. Now Tosfa says, okay, why can't so let Rish Lakish answer? Very simple. We're talking about that the sitoin is a goy. And Tosfos explains that no, we find that a sitoin, besides like Rashi is selling, that he sells wholesale to smaller grocers, in addition, that the sitoin is more like a distributor. In addition, we find in a Gemara in Bava Basra that you're also a sitoin is somebody who you buy liquids from. You buy from him things like wine and oil. Now, you can't buy wine from a goy, of course, it would be Yain Nesef. Oil, the Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah that there was a long period of time when there was a gzera not to use oil made by goyim. Later on, they rescinded that zera, but this braisa would be from before that time. So therefore, of necessity, this sitan cannot be a goy; it must be a yid, and therefore we have to figure out how would this braisa work according to Rish Lakish. And the answer is Amalach Rish Lakish, Amani Rav Shimon. The answer is Rish Lakish is going to tell you this braisa is strictly according to Rav Shimon. But we establish at the beginning of the sugya that Rish Lakish is saying my whole concept that Meshicha Koinim and Atorah is not according to Rish Lakish, is not according to Rav Shimon, only according to the Chachamim. Well, very well then, this braisa that says that you need that Mois or make a Kinyan Min Atorah would be necessarily according to Rav Shimon. So that's that then. So we have this machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Again, we do have proofs that seemingly work in Rish Lakish's favor. On the other hand, Tosfos describes over here at some length that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, that Dvar Torah Mois Koinus, and therefore that has various implications in halacha. As Rashi had pointed out, it meant that if you bought something with Mois, then already if you Makadish a woman with it would be a valid Kedushin on a Daraisa level. It means as far as things of Me'ila that we were talking about over here. It means as far as the cases that the Gemara had mentioned earlier involving certain rare cases of chalifin slash sale, that there we say Mois Koinus, and we have various other examples where there's a nafkamin. Okay. Now, the Mishnah had said, Aval Amur Misha Parach. Hold on. Now, the Chachamim had said that if somebody backs out of a deal after the money has changed hands, then we said there's Misha Parach involved, that Hashem who punished the various generations that we mentioned over there, the Anshe Dor HaMabul and Dor HaFloga and so forth, is going to punish somebody who doesn't keep his word. So what is the nature of this curse that the Mishnah is saying? We learn a discussion of Amiroyim, Abaya Omer are doing Meid'inim. Abaya says it doesn't mean that, it means that we inform him. Based in informs this person who wants to back out of the deal, you should know Hashem is not going to be happy with you and Misha Pora, etc. They don't actually curse him with a formal declaration in Based in, they just inform him. Rava Amar Melat Laitinan Lay, whereas Rava says they actually make an official curse of it. They actually have a ceremony in Based in that they actually impose the curse on him. In fact, does that mean that they actually mention him by name? In fact, Meiri says they actually say by name, Misha Pora from et cetera, who you Pora from you, Ploini Ben Ploini, who are not Oymid B'Dibura. On the other hand, the Rambam's Loshen seems to imply that we just say generically. We tell him we do have the ceremony in Based in, but we don't mention his actual name. We just finish off who you Pora, Mi Misha in Oymid B'Dibura, a person who doesn't keep his word. Well, what's the basis of the machlokas? Abaya says you only inform him, but you don't actually curse him, because the pasuk says you're not allowed to curse a nasi among your people, and that means primarily that's talking about a nasi, but in fact it applies to everybody else as well. So you're not allowed to curse a fellow yid. Therefore, Abaya is saying you don't want Based in to impose a curse on him. Rava, I'm a melech laitin, and Rava says there's no problem with that. Dichtiv ba'amcha, because the pasuk is among your people. That means ba'oise ma'ise amcha. Only when he's acting the way a yid should act. He always not acting the way a yid should act, because a yid is not supposed to renege on his word. So therefore, Rava says, go ahead and curse him, and there's no problem with that. The Ritzvah points out, Abaya would agree with that, but Abaya would say that, look, you know, after all, why is he changing his mind? Is it because the price went up or down, or he doesn't need the thing anymore? So you can't say, I mean, it's a, fine, it's not the best thing for him to do, but you can't say he's really not at all acting like a yid to the extent that you should curse him. Therefore, Abaya says you don't. But Rava says, no, the fact is, a yid has to hold to his word. So Rava says, where do I, now, I mean, the technical isser of cursing another yid is only when Hashem's name is used. Here we're not using Hashem's name, but still there is a certain degree of isser involved and involved in that. And also the Meiri points out the fact that we use the Lashon, Mi Shapara, the one who paid back. And who is it, the one who paid them back? Hashem. So that's tantamount to mentioning Hashem's name. So Rava says, where do I get this from? That Mishapara involves an actual Soamonian based in. You have a case where Abchia bar Yosef was paid in advance money for salt. So again, he had received the money, but the other guy hadn't yet done Mashicha on the salt. Later on, the price of salt went up. So now he wants to go back on the deal because he could get a better price for it someplace else. Also the Kamei de Rav Yechanan. So he came to Rav Yechanan to find out whether he's allowed to. Omalei, so Rav Yechanan tells him, Zil Havlahu, no, go give them the salt, the Eloi, and if not, Kabbalah Lecha Mishapara, then you're going to have to accept on yourself this curse of Mishapara. Now, the Amateur Durim Udin in life, it's just a matter of informing him, Rav Chiya bar Yosef Bar Eduihu. Does Rav Chiya bar Yosef need to be informed of that? He knows what the Mishnah says. So obviously, therefore, Rav Yechanan is telling him that you're going to have to accept on him, on yourself, means we're going to have an actual ceremony in Beis Din where you're going to have to accept that on yourself. So that shows that that it's actually being an official proceeding done by Beis Din, says Rava. So I'm going to ask, so you're telling me, Rava, then that we actually curse him. Well, then why would Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef be acting in a way to accept on himself a curse of the Chachamim? In other words, doesn't he realize that there is a potential curse involved over here, and he wouldn't want to do that? Either way, we have to understand what's going on in the story over here. Ella Rav Chiya bar Yosef, a Rovin who diyavilei. The answer is, it must be that with Rav Chiya bar Yosef, he hadn't received the full purchase price. All they had given him was a down payment. So he figured, okay, the part they paid me for, I have to deliver them the salt no matter what. But the rest of it, he figured, who sava kenegdo hu koina. So he figured the guy is only koina the amount that he gave money for, the amount that he gave the down payment for. But Rabbi Yechanan tells him, no, kenegdo kula hu koina. The fact is, he's acquired the entire thing, and therefore there's going to be mishapara. So you can't really bring a proof from this one way or the other, whether there's an actual ceremony in Beis Din or not. Because the fact is, either way, Rav Chiya bar Yosef, in fact, did not have all the information. Yes, he knows what it says in the Mishnah. And yes, he knows that there was a curse involved, but he didn't know that that would apply in this case because he figured there was only a down payment involved. Now, there is, we're going to learn tomorrow, Bez Hashem, we're going to learn that there is, so as far as Dvarim, where as we learned before, when there's only words involved, we said there's no Mishapara. What is it called? Mechus. We said Ein Rachamim Neichaymenu. The Chachamim are not pleased with such a person. And there's something called Mechus Re'amana. The person is acting as a dishonest person. Okay, Rav Chiya bar Yosef is not going to want to act as a dishonest person either. So how would that work? So the Ritzvah explains that he would hold like an opinion that says, we're going to learn later on, that Rav says there's no Mechus Re'amana. It's not even considered dishonest. And again, you could say that even Rabbi Yochanan, who disagrees, would say only when the price didn't change and he just wants to back out for no good reason. But then Mechus Ramana wouldn't apply about that. We'll learn more about that point tomorrow, Best Hashem. But anyway, the point is that you have no proof really from this story, one way or the other, about whether Mishapara involves based in actually imposing a curse on him or just informing him that a curse exists. Well, since we're talking about down payment, let's talk about more dinim in that connection. Itmar. So we have a discussion. A rovin. In fact, when a person gives a down payment for something, Rav Omer Kenegdo Yukoina, Rav says he's koina only the amount, the only an equivalent amount of the merchandise for which he paid, but not the whole thing. But Rabbi Yochanan, but connected kula, he'll koina. Rabbi Yochanan says he is koina the he is koina the entire thing. So in the case of karka, it would mean he's acquired the entire karka. In the case of metaltlin, it would mean that he's acquired the entire metaltlin once meshicha takes place. So the Gemara continues. So the Gemara says, Meisvi, I have a contradiction on Rab. A brisa says, Hanoisen Eroven Lachaveiro, when a person gives a down payment to somebody else on merchandise, but Omer Loi, and he tells him, Imani Chozevi, we're going to make a deal. I'm going to commit myself so strongly to this deal. If I change my mind, Eroni Mochul Loch, then my Eroven, then my down payment is Mochul, is Nimchal to you, meaning, in other words, you'll be able to keep the money and you don't have to deliver me the goods at all if I back out of the deal. And the other one says, I also want to make sure the deal goes through. So the seller says, if I change my mind, I will double your Eroven, I'll double your down payment, meaning I'll give you twice as much of the merchandise as your down payment otherwise would have gotten. Then Rabbi Yossi says that... So in other words, Tosfos points out, doesn't mean I'm going to give you twice as much money. It means that I'm going to say like this, your down payment of $100, let's say, would have gotten you X amount of the merchandise, would have gotten you 100 pounds of the merchandise. Instead, if I try to back out of the deal, then I'm accepting on myself that I will instead give you 200 of the merchandise for your $100. So Niskaim Watznoim Divir Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says that's a valid tonight. And therefore, and each of them has to keep his sign. And the Gemara interjects, Rabbi Yossi, the time made, Amar Asmachta Kanya. Rabbi Yossi goes according to his Shitta, who holds that an Asmachta is a valid Kinyan. An Asmachta would be something like this, where you're making the validity of something depend on something that's going to happen in the future, where you don't know whether it's going to happen or not. So it's called Asmachta, Meloshen Smichos, Meloshen, does the person have a mental guarantee that it's going to take place? Rabbi Yossi holds, it doesn't matter, either way it is a valid king. But the Braisa continues, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Daya Sheyikne, Keneged Ervoine, Rabbi Yehuda says that it's enough, that he's Kona, an amount equivalent to his Eroven, in other words, it's an Asmachta. So it's an asmachta, and the Gemara says, and that's the thing. Rabbi Yehuda holds that an asmachta is not koina, and therefore you can't say he's koina the entire thing. Fine, whatever he paid for the down payment is how much he acquires, but no more than that. And the Braisa continues, Omer Rav Shimon Gamliel, Bamed Varam Amorim, when does Rabbi Yehuda say that your koina only connected to Ervoni? Bizman Sha'omale Ervoni Yikoin, when he says that my Eroven should accomplish a kinyan, that it shouldn't just be a down payment, that it should accomplish the kinyan. And the fact is, Kesef is not a kinyan, you need Mashiach. But if there was a sale of a house or a field for 1,000 zuz, or Parole Mehem Chamesh Mehem zuz, and he paid him 500 zuz out of it, Kona, but then he is Kona, the entire house, and then he has to pay him the rest. And even if it's several years later, even if he hasn't paid it for years, he eventually does have to pay back. He eventually does have to pay back the rest. Obviously, he should pay it back much sooner than that. Usually we say, Stam alva, shloshim yoyim, but even if for whatever reason he didn't, the guy is still entitled to tell him years later, you haven't paid me the rest. We don't say that he was most thing. So in other words, Tosfos says that the point of the question is that Rav Shimon Gamliel is explaining that he's explaining that Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi are only arguing about now. You can have when he gave it to him as a down payment versus when he gave it to him as a down payment. But if he did, then everybody would agree that it works, which doesn't fit according to Rav. Where according to Rav, we said that he's only koina keneged ma'os. So that's the point of the question. My lab who adin lametaltlin libedestama. Shouldn't we assume that the same din would apply as far as metaltlin? And he didn't say one way or the other. He just gave it a stam and did not specify whether he's giving it as a down payment or whatever. And we would say koni lahula kulu. It sounds like he's kona the whole thing. So that wouldn't fit with Rav. And the answer is like Metalplin with a stumble iconi. No, you could say that Metalplin when he gave it without specifying. He's not Kona the whole thing. He's only Kona an amount equal to his A Robin. Or Maishna, what's the difference? Because Maishna Kauka, what's the difference between Kauka? The difference is Kauka, but Kasper, Konulei Mamish, because Kesef works as a Kenyan for Kauka. So therefore, so it can accomplish a complete Kenyan. Therefore, Konulei Lakula. Therefore, you can also say you gave a down payment and it's enough to be Kona the whole thing. Metalplin, the Lakoni Awala Kabuli Mishapara. But when it comes to Metalplin, the extent of the Kenyan is only insofar as Mishapara, therefore Lakoni Lakule, so you could say he's not Kona the entire thing. So therefore, so this Braisa could still very well fit according to Rav. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, and we'll deal with more of the ins and outs of this machlokas about a Robin. And again, this is this time of year, Mechiras Chometz. This is one of those things which is negated to that. Here, the goy only pays a down payment on the chometz. Is that enough? So based on what we're saying over here, that yeah, he can be Kona the whole thing based on his Eirobin. However, you do have a consideration that the Gemara mentions about Yotze v'Nichnas, which we touched on the other day, when he's demanding the rest of the payment. Where there we say that not, that is actually why the Alter Rebbe came up with the concept of that you have to, in the Alter Rebbe's times, by the way, they didn't yet have the concept of selling the chometz to the goy through the rug. In the Alter Rebbe's times, it had been, as it had been for a few hundred years before that, each person would make their own individual transaction with the goy to sell their chometz. You have all kinds of siddish and mises about that, where a person wants to sell his chometz and the goyim don't want to buy it. You have a story involving the father, I think the Chozim Lublin or somebody like that, who ended up pouring out all of his mashke because he couldn't find anybody to sell it to. Anyway, in the generation after the Alter Rebbe, they came up with the idea of selling it through the Rav, and it was actually very controversial at first, and eventually it became widely accepted. But the point is, the Alter Rebbe says, when you're selling directly to the goy, you have the problem of Yotze v'Nichnas. You'd like the rest of your money. You're not going to give him all that stock of chometz of yours only for the down payment. You're willing to over Pesach, but after Pesach, you want the rest of the payment, or he's going to give you back the chometz. And that would be a problem of Yotze v'Nichnas. Therefore, the Alter Rebbe comes up with the idea of having a third party involved, of having an Orev Kablon, where therefore that person is not Yotze v'Nichnas on the money, and therefore you don't have a problem. And in fact, so now when we sell through the Rav, then that accomplishes the same thing. We're not directly dealing with the Goy. Therefore, there's no Yotze v'Nichnas. Therefore, the Goy gives his down payment and he can actually acquire all the chametz by means of that.
So when we sell the chametz, we don't get anything in exchange.
So no, what it is the Rav acting as our shliach is getting something for it. He's getting a down payment. Now, the deal is the goy after Pesach can pay up the rest of it, or he can return, or he can sell back the chametz and get back his down payment. The point is, in other words, based on our Gemara over here, according to Rav, that whole mechanism wouldn't have worked because according to Rav, if a down payment is only Kona part of it. So you would say, if the goy doesn't come up with the entire cash, then he hasn't been Kona the entire Metalplin, and that wouldn't work. Because obviously the goy is not coming up with the amount of money to buy all the chometz in the neighborhood. Therefore, the halacha in the end is like Rabbi Yochanan, that he is in fact kona the entire thing, and therefore that's the mechanism by which it works.
But let's say I'm selling wheat through the Rav, outside of Pesach. The Rav has to give me money, otherwise there's no sale.
Right. Well, so when it comes right, during the rest of the year, when it comes to the rest of the year, you don't need the Rav as your go-between. If you want to sell your wheat to a goy during the rest of the year, because you make your deal with the goy, he gives you money. Again, we said before that according to many Rishonim, the goy can be Kona with Kesef, and even if we say that not, then you do one of the other methods of Kinyan. Worse comes to worse, again, you have Kinyan Situmta, which is a well-accepted a type of Kinyan that's accepted in a certain society. And then therefore, yeah, that's the deal is done. Here, what it is you're using the Rav as your go-between. You're appointing the Rav your shliach. It's called a Murshe. You're appointing him. You're giving him the authority to sell your chometz to whoever he wants and however he wants. And then the Rav is receiving the down payment. If it were to happen in the end, the goy were to say, you know what, I do want to buy all the chometz outright. And here, I'll give you the rest of the money. Then, yeah, the Rav would go to every person who did mechiras chometz through him and give him his portion of the money.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.